burns up, dies, and a dark shadow falls over his soul. From the ashes of a once great man has risen a curse, a wrong that must be righted. We look to the skies for a vindicator, someone to strike fear into the black hearts of the same man who created him. The battle between good and evil has begun. Against an army of shadows comes a dark warrior, the purveyor of good, with a voice of silence and a mission of justice. This is Sting.
And we're back here on Inside the Ropes, and it is a friend of the show. It feels like only yesterday we were touring him around Glasgow, Manchester and London, and having him come out of rooms and face paint and scaring us. It's Sting! Sting, how are you?
I'm doing great. I remember that trip. I remember being in the garage.
I still don't know how you knew to do that accent. We're in Glasgow and you said, we're not in the garage, we're in the garage.
Yeah, I don't either. I love doing impersonations and accents of all different kinds, you know, and so it's just a fun thing for me. It always has been.
Well, I don't know if you remember this specifically, but because that was the first tour that we ever did, like big tour, and I remember we went to London for the first show, and you arrived, and you know, very pleasant and all that kind of stuff. And I had to come and get you at one point for the meet and greet or something. I had to come and say hi. And you opened the door as Sting. And I remember just kind of looking at you going, this is so strange. It's so odd. Because 10 minutes ago, you were Steve.
Right. But, I went into the telephone booth and came out different. Yeah, I know.
And then I don't know if you remember this, but we were in Manchester and there was a guy in the front row and he was asking you a question. And he said, you know, hi Sting, do you remember wrestling in Blackburn in 1992? And you just kind of, you looked at him as if like, is he joking? Is he?
I remember that.
But you very quickly came back and said, well, I don't remember wrestling in Blackburn, but I remember wrestling Black Bart, if that helps you. And
Easy crowd.
You had them in the palm of your hands, but you're coming back to the UK. You're coming back to Liverpool for the Comic Con, and obviously now you're not coming over here a bunch. It's quite a rare chance to see you. Do you still get a kick out of coming over and doing these shows and meeting people after all these years?
You know, it's probably has more meaning now, really than it ever has. You know, it seems like the more time that goes by, the more you'll, for example, talk to a grown man who is in tears because the only relationship that he had with his dad was watching me wrestle or watching wrestling. These are meaningful moments, you know, or, you know, you taught me how to stand up for myself, or, you know, I was bullied as a kid, and when I watched you helped me to, you know, rise above it and to, you know, come through. And I mean, you know, these kind of moments are amazing, you know. Or, you know, I was battling cancer and, you know, you were the one bright light. These kind of things that fans share now, it makes you realize that, you know, throughout the years you have an impact, but you have no idea, you know, what kind of impact you have until, you know, you're somebody like me 30 years later. And boy, these face-to-face meetings with the fans, you know, they loved those days. They missed those days, and they're not forgetting them. And I'm grateful for that, you know, just so respectful. So it's just like it has more impact now than ever.
Well, you know, it's funny because I remember when we did the tour in 2015, like I said, we'd done a couple of like one night shows with DDP and Jim Cornette and people like that. But I remember being in the queue, the meet and greet, and we were kind of managing the queue and stuff. And there was a guy, and he just looked a bit like, I don't know if it was upset or whatever it was. And I just went, are you okay? And he said that, you know, I got bullied in high school, and it was Sting that helped me be able to. And so even for us, we were seeing that from people, and in the crowd and in the queue, and it was just great to see them, you know. And then they'd come up to you, and you're dressed and look fully like Sting, but you're the most polite man on earth. So it's
Yeah, or you know, even the the Halloween thing, I dressed up like you for Halloween, or I dressed up like you for such and such a party or get together or whatever. And as kids, and a lot of them, they show me these pictures as adults. You got NBA players out here and NFL players that, for Halloween will, do the crow sting, wolf pack sting. I mean, it's amazing. So.
Is it weird for you, like, because you have this career as, it's affectionately known as Surfer Sting now, but you have this career as the first incarnation of Sting for pretty much a decade almost, and now that we go back, when you go, people remember this crow thing and that character almost more in some ways, or that's the one that people dress up as. I mean, not a lot of wrestlers get, a few different kind of eras of their character that are so memorable. I mean, did you ever see that coming, that kind of thing could happen for you 10 years in?
No. It's just, Dusty Rhodes was Dusty Rhodes, for all those years. And Hulk Hogan has been Hulk Hogan. He was Hollywood there for a little while, but I mean, it's just, Scott Hall is Scott Hall. Kevin Nash is Kevin Nash. And it's, I was just yesterday in New York. And doing an autograph session there, and these fans will come with these action figures, and there's one in particular that WCW did way back when, and it's like every era of Sting pretty much. There's like five different action figures in there, from Surfer Sting all the way through to Crow Sting and Wolfpack Sting, and it's amazing to me. I never would have guessed that I would have changed my character so many times, but I guess just the times changed. Wrestling fans changed, and you have to try to figure out a way to evolve, and for me it was just drastic character changes from time to time.
And we, like, was there a, how long would you say, I mean, I know it's a lot of years later now, so you might not be able to exactly remember, but, like, do you remember kind of how long it was that you were kind of battling internally, kind of going, I need to make a change here, because you could just stay Surfer Sting, and you probably always get a good reaction as being that character, but for you to have more longevity, I guess you wanted to do something different.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it wasn't, I suppose it was somewhat gradual, but I wouldn't give it any more than 12 months or so, about a 12-month period, maybe just 6 months even. Hulk was, with us with WCW way back when, and the fans started to boo him in so many different markets, with the the red and yellow, and say your prayers, take your vitamins, and all that kind of stuff. And but all around that time, Hall and Nash, their character changed, and they made that video, the very first video, kind of a black and white, real edgy, grainy kind of a film, and their characters changed, and it was done so well. And I knew, that I could just feel it, it's like, man, I got to change my character quick. And and those types of things were happening, and I could feel it coming, and wrestling fans were changing. They wanted to see something different. They wanted to see something more edgy all around. And so, I had to, I knew I had to change. And so, the rest is history.
And obviously, the story's been told a lot of times, but Scott Hall had said to you at one point about the crow or whatever. But when you change the character and you become the crow, like, how did you guys kind of come up with the idea to kind of not have you be a regular wrestler on TV all the time, but to do this kind of year storyline where you would build it and build it, and you would, it was almost like episodes of Nitro would build to this big rumbling crescendo where you would appear, and that made the character better.
That's one of the lessons that I learned was, the evolving, into this character is less is more. And it sure did work. You know, instead of being out there and, you know, opening your mouth every other segment on every show and being involved, and you know, they had already seen me come out, you know, on TV tapings for years, you know, 2-3 times a night. And then, you know, what we called our of the TV tapings, you do your dark match, you know, and in every dark match on top of that, you know. So it's like, man, okay, let's just rethink this a little bit here. You know, the character had this certain mysterious kind of a look, and it's almost like, you know, the moment you open your mouth, you turn into, you know, some guy named Steve with a painted face or something. You know, it's like it's just not going to work anymore. And so let's just keep the mouth, you know, zipped up, and you know, your actions will speak for themselves, and the whole less is more thing really, really played in. And you know, to be honest, there were times in the very beginning where we were just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, you know, because it's like, okay, I'm going to change my character. I'm going to have a white face now. I'll put a little black around my eyes, you know, a little Kevin or a Scott Hall influence there. Put a black trench coat on, man, you know. So I did that, and you know, the gloves, and just, okay, just an appearance, you know, let's just do that. And it's a make or break. Fans are either going to absolutely, you know, laugh it out of town, and you'll never recover. You know, a Shockmaster story, or you know, it's going to be kind of cool, kind of, you know, edgy, kind of what they're looking for. And so it worked. You know, I was nervous that first time. I was very nervous. I didn't know whether fans would receive it. And it was like, because, you know, you can try things, and you've seen different guys try different things over the years, and sometimes it just bombs. And when it bombs like that, there's never a recovery. So
No, yeah.
it was touch and go.
No second chance to make a first impression, I guess. But
Right,
it's
right.
funny because, like, and I'm not just saying this to kind of kiss up to you because you're on the show, but I mean, when you watch the stuff back now, the kind of Sting that year leading up to Starrcade, it holds up even more now, I think, than it did at the time, because there's so many different elements to it, the fake Sting and all these different things that you guys would do, that I think, you know,
Right.
people. But something that's always fascinated me about you, and I found this out more from doing the tour with you, is that I think you're maybe like the biggest star in wrestling that didn't really have an ego about, you know, politics and all this kind of stuff, because you've just always seemed very much like, I like doing it. It was fun. I worked hard at it. But, you know, not this attitude of, you know, well, I need to win this because if I don't win, you know, it just didn't seem like that was your MO. But you were phenomenally successful. So how did you kind of tread those waters in, you know, what were very political times back in the day?
You know, you mentioned winning or losing, right? In your question just now. Yeah, I mean, it's that's another thing that I learned over the years is sometimes, you know, for me to lose a match, it didn't necessarily hurt. It actually kind of helped. If wrestling fans see somebody out there, you know, busting their balls. I mean, every event. I mean, working hard in the ring and working hard on your, you know, your character and your gear and staying in shape. And you know, they recognize these things. They see that, and I think it yields a lot of fruit. And so, you know, for me, I just, you know, I chose to always involve the fans, always try to you know, just stay on the cutting edge, and try to entertain, try to give them what they wanted. And so, you know, having these matches and losing, sometimes it actually kind of, in a way, it kind of helped. You know, if anything else, you know, wrestling fans were, you know, we had what we called the dirt sheets way back then, you know, because there was no internet. And, you know, the dirt sheets, you know, they'd be writing, you know, so-and-so didn't want to, you know, put Sting over and, you know, but Sting's performance was this and that. And, you know, it was great. And so it actually kind of helped me, I think, over the years to lose. So many guys were caught up with the who wins and who loses thing. And it's just like, man, we're trying to entertain everybody. So let's just do that, you know. And if fans see some kind of, you know, I don't know what's laziness, you know, disgruntled, you know, and so therefore it shows in the ring, and you know, you've got a character or you've got a talent that's really not putting forth, you know, the effort to try to make the product as good as possible. You know, that rubs fans the wrong way, I think, you know. So for me, it didn't matter. It didn't matter winning or losing. Matter of fact, I preferred to lose, you know, a lot of times. So
do you think in hindsight, because, you know, one of the biggest matches of your career was the Starrcade 97 match with Hogan. Do you think in hindsight, not from a perspective of, you know, you were like, I had to win or I had to lose. Do you think that's maybe in hindsight something that they should have just done, you beating him straight down the middle and giving people that kind of happy ending in that moment? Or do you think it is something that them extending it and sort of putting all these different layers on it was the right way to go? Like, looking back now, what do you think the right decision was?
Oh, I think that, you know, the way it was designed from the get go, and then, you know, lots of changes and, you know, on the day of, you know, and without getting into all that crap, you know, if we'd have just stuck with the original plan and just done what we set out, been really good. So that's one time I think we should have left it the way it was, and just, you know, Sting goes over, and, you know, the next day we regroup.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, when you were in WCW, I remember as a kid watching it, one of the big moments that kind of was quite shocking to watch was Sting joining the Wolfpack and going to the Red Facebook, because you were like Mr. WCW. Did you just kind of feel like it was time to again shake things up a little bit, do the Red, do something different? Because for a long time it felt like the one person who would never be in any version of the NWO would be Sting. How did it come about that you ended up kind of doing the Wolfpack thing?
I don't know if I could really answer that question. I mean, it's just, it's just one of those moments where it just seems like, you know, the right thing. It seems like, you know, it's going to bear that fruit again. It's going to yield something. Fans want it. And so, you know, let's do it. And I think it worked.
Yeah, well, the fact that you're still doing conventions in the red face paint, I think, tells you that it worked. I think that's it's your test. We missed to mention that you were actually on Raw this past week as part of Ric Flair's 70th birthday celebration. What was it like to go back? Any fun stories about any interactions that you had? And how do you keep looking younger? What is your secret?
Man, I that's a great compliment. I don't know what I did that night, but I've had people texting me and say, you look great, you know, and it's like, I just feel like I'm just the same guy, you know. I really don't know. I mean, I'm trying to stay active, trying to stay in the gym still. I mean, I'm still, you know, getting my heart rate way up there and trying to stay in good physical condition. It felt great. It felt great to, you know, see some old friends again and, you know, just be in the ring and with the WWE crowd and audience, and especially on Raw, you know, the crowd received me great again. It's just, it's always good, man. It's always good to be back with the crowd, always good back to, you know, to see people. And I spent most of the day with Ricky Steamboat, which was kind of cool. Last time we did that, we were in Germany. I was in Germany with Flair and Steamboat. We were on a tour, and the bus was going to, you know, take all the guys to. We were on our, I forget where we were, but we were on our way to Berlin, and we didn't want to take that that bus. And so Ricky and Flair and I rented a Mercedes, and Ricky drove, and, you know, we were on the Autobahn going fast, you know. Great. Last time I had any kind of time with Ricky on the road, and so it was good to see Ricky Steamboat again.
I don't know if you clocked when he came out and he started chopping all the wrestlers on the way to the ring. It was great. It was very funny. So, I mean, I guess the thing that people never expected to happen was for you to go to WWE. You also had the program with Triple H. But I wanted to ask you, what was the closest that it ever got to you and Undertaker actually doing a match? What was the closest that it ever got to happening?
I would say the closest it ever got is my stepping foot into the WWE. But it just, that's as close as it ever came. I honestly don't know what Undertaker's, you know, what his desire ever was, you know. I mean, we've always been, you know, friendly toward one another, but, you know, I've been the one outspoken about this match for decades now, and so I'm not really quite sure where he stands with it, you know. And I'm not sure why we could never make the thing happen. I mean, it's you know, once he had already, you know, signed, you know, on the dotted line to wrestle Brock, and so there was always something that happened, some reason why we couldn't do it. So,
and you know, the match at WrestleMania with Triple H is one of those matches that it just, like, it was the biggest sort of slice of nostalgia that you're ever going to get with the NWO and DX. And you can see when you're walking down to the ring, you're just kind of smiling because you're just kind of happy to be doing it. What was the experience like of doing WrestleMania and having, you know, one of the most memorable matches on the show? And now we're a few years removed from it. What are your memories of it?
Almost, you know, the word surreal. I always use that word surreal because it was. Here I am walking out and finally able to say, I've done it. WrestleMania, you know, nobody thought it would ever happen, especially me. I never thought it would happen, but here I am. I'm walking through the curtain. It's WrestleMania. It's Triple H versus Sting. And then you're right. I love the way you put that. The biggest slice of nostalgia ever. I mean, it's almost like the Beatles coming back together. You know, it was a moment even for me to kind of take it in, you know. We're doing our deal out there, and there's the NWO, and there's DX, and is this really happening? And then you have that one moment with all of us in the end, and, you know, a handshake with Triple H, and it's kind of like a mutual respect kind of a thing after the Monday Night Wars all those years ago. And what a great time, what a great moment for me, you know, to be in the ring with, you know, all my buddies. And you just know the crowd is soaking it up, and it'll be, you know, gosh, top five, maybe. I don't know. It all depends on who you're talking to, I guess. Top five moments in the, you know, WrestleMania history. That's a big one. It's up there.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mean, we talked about this when you were over for the tour as well. There were a lot of people disappointed that Triple H was the winner. But I guess the thing that's kind of, I guess we forget in hindsight, is that you probably would have went on to have, you know, a certain amount more matches for WWE. So that wasn't going to be the kind of, I guess it wasn't just going to be you and him and then you and Rollins. But do you get the impression, because obviously WWE won the Monday Night Wars, so they get to write the history, right? They get to tell the tale. I guess saying this in the kind of least kind of bitter relationship end way, do you think they're over it? Like, do you think that they're kind of like, it's fine? Do you get the sense that everybody's kind of on the same page now? Or do you ever get the sense that there's a residual kind of, you know, we won, we want to let you remember that we won?
That's funny. No, I think everyone's over it. I really do. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's done and gone. And I mean, what more do you want? You know, I mean, they did win. I mean, WCW is long gone. WWE is a global killing machine, and you can't get any bigger. I mean, it's like one of the biggest, like Vince McMahon says, the biggest spectacles in all of sports entertainment. It truly is. I mean, wherever they go, I mean, the world comes to see it. They travel all over the world to come to WrestleMania. So it is what it is. And that's that.
That's that. Well, I do want to ask you, because obviously, as we kind of round off here, All Elite Wrestling is starting up this year, another wrestling promotion. You've got Chris Jericho, Cody Rhodes, and all these different wrestlers. And there is kind of that, people are kind of clamoring and hoping that there might be another, you know, big competition thing happening. What do you make of the idea of there being another big company, a kind of alternative out there? Do you see that happening? Do you see that as being realistic? And because it's kind of fascinating to talk to you, who was this big part of the Monday Night Wars, and now here we are 20 years later with the potential of another, I don't want to say war, but, you know, another big company on the horizon.
Well, I mean, it worked once, you know, WCW and WWE, the Monday Night Wars way back when, and, you know, to try to recreate something like that, you know, the timing of everything would have to hit just perfect, you know. Wrestling kind of goes in, you know, some people think it's a 5-year cycle where it peaks and then it drops back down for five and then it comes back up. And some people say it's more like 7, whatever it is. It's going to require a ton of money. It's going to require, you know, somebody with very, very deep pockets and somebody extremely serious, somebody all in. I mean, all in. You can't go part way with it. It's you know, then I don't know, possibly, you know, I suppose something could happen. But it would just require so much, a billionaire who's all in. Otherwise, it ain't happening in my book.
Yeah. Well, we've just got a couple of listener questions to finish off that I thought would be pretty fun to ask you. We've got one of our listeners, Sam Wallace, had said, first of all, thank you for being an awesome character and performer for decades. You personified WCW through its best times. And his question was, what are your memories of the War Games matches in WCW? What do you think of the gimmick then and how it's being used now? What do you make of War Games and your memories of it?
I don't watch the product, so I have no idea. I have heard at least that I guess they're using, you know, WCW guys from way back when, you know, to be involved in some of these matches. Is that true? I don't even know.
I think they're using like younger guys to have War Games matches, but they've got WCW guys producing and stuff. But they're using a version of the War Games match now.
Yeah. They were a lot of fun, you know, those matches. That's the one thing I can remember. And you know, Animal and Hawk and, you know, everybody, the Horsemen, and, you know, some of those matches, they were a lot of fun, you know, to get all the top talent in there together at one time. So good memories. I mean, I can say that. As far as how they're being used now, I'm not watching the product, so I don't know.
And then Lee Kimber wants to know, looking back on your feud with Vader, what are your memories of working with him, and how do you feel that those matches stand up today?
I think they would stand up well today. I always loved working with the big guys, the Killers, you know, and you know, somebody that we could tell a great story with, you know. It's funny because I've had wrestling fans even just recently saying, "Oh, I loved your matches with Vader. I remember, you know, watching him. The first match I ever saw was, you know, you and Vader." Or when Vader came in, I thought, "Oh, not even Sting can take him," you know. And so we told a great story, and man, at his prime, you know, at his, you know, almost 400 pounds and doing the moonsault off the top rope, and, you know, just the believability. He was one of the guys I worked with over the years that, you know, wrestling fans would say, "Oh, okay, that's not fake. Leah, or, you know, Vader's honestly trying to kill Sting. He's trying to kill him." You know, I have great memories, you know, working with, with Leon. Great matches. I had a lot of fun working with him.
And then
and I'm sorry he's not anymore.
Yeah, hopefully he gets into the Hall of Fame pretty soon. And just kind of the last thing to ask you is, Aiden had asked when the Seth Rollins match had happened, and obviously the injury happened. Was there any plans for you in WWE after that? Was there plans in place already, or were you guys just kind of seeing how it goes as each match happened?
Kind of doing just a one-off every time, just to see, you know. And I had made it known that, you know, I wanted to do the Taker match, and I believe that possibly it could have happened if I hadn't gotten hurt. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to believe that everyone would have been on the same page and we could have made that happen. You know, I wanted to do it that next Mania. You know.
Yeah. Well, so Stephen Bradley, or the last thing he wanted to ask, and we'll close with this, is, and you, I know you get asked it all the time, but if it was offered now to do a Taker match, I mean, is it even in the realm of possibility? Should people completely close the door on it? Can you set the record straight?
All I can say is I believe I could pull that off. I believe that I could pull it off against Taker. And I believe it would be a night to remember, but I do not believe that it will be happening.
So you're saying there's a chance, but not likely. Sting, I want to thank you so much for coming on. You're going to be at the Comic Con in Liverpool. We'll put all the information up on our social media. You can go to the Twitter page for the Comic Con, which is ComCon Liverpool. And you truly are the nicest man in wrestling, so I appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure, Kenny. Looking forward to seeing you again, and looking forward to coming to Liverpool and seeing all the wrestling fans out there. And I might even do a Beatles tour or something like that while I'm there. I've never done that. So Abbey Road and the whole package.
Yeah, make sure you do. You can follow Sting on Twitter at Sting. I guess the battle between you and Sting of the Police, you won, got the Twitter handle, so congratulations.
Yeah. Have you seen the picture of him and me together from about 1994 or so, somewhere around there?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to have a chat with him about how, because you two must have run into that so many times over the years, the jokes.
The only time we ever had a moment to chat was that concert. It was Chastain Park in Atlanta, Georgia, outdoor venue. It's kind of like the Hollywood Bowl in California. He was great. As a matter of fact, you know, he contacted us and said, man, you know, I want to meet this guy. And the reason why he wanted to meet me was, at the time, he said his 9-year-old son had my poster up in his room. And he said, I had to meet this guy, this wrestler guy, you know. And so that's the only time we ever had a chat, you know. And he had me up on the stage, and you can see it in the picture, but he took the guitar and put it around my neck. And it was a good meeting, good time.
There you go. Just another day in the life of Sting. Well, I want to thank you for coming on again. Head along to Comic Con Liverpool, and if you get a chance to go meet Sting anywhere, take it, because he is a lovely, lovely man. Sting, thanks very much.
Thank you. See ya.